What makes SDN tick? Let's find out in this interview with its founder and director.
Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. Your host is Accepted's founder and world-renowned admissions guru, Linda Abraham. At Accepted, our mission is to get you to that unforgettable moment when you read your acceptance email and shout, "Yes, I'm in!" Confident you'll be attending the perfect program to help you launch the career of your dreams.
Welcome to the 347th episode of Admission Straight Talk. Thanks so much for joining me. Before I introduce our guests, I'd like to ask you a question. Do you know how to get accepted to medical school? Dr. Susie Schweikert does, and she shares her knowledge and insight in Accepted's free guide, Med School Admissions, What You Need to Know to Get Accepted. Download your free copy at accepted.com/347download. Now, I'm thrilled to introduce our guests today, Dr. Lee Burnett and Laura Turner. Dr. Burnett, whose main job is serving as the commander of the 32nd Hospital Center at the U.S. Army's Fort Polk in Louisiana, is on the side the founder and director of Student Doctor Network in a volunteer capacity. He graduated from UC Davis and then attended Western University of Health Sciences for medical school, joining the Army Reserves after graduation. He completed his family medicine residency at UC Irvine, started practicing, and was called to duty. He has served in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Korea during his military career. Laura earned her bachelor's at UC Davis and her master's at UCLA, both in mechanical engineering. She worked in marketing and project management until joining SDN in 2009. She became executive director of SDN in 2012 and has served in that capacity ever since. Lee and Laura, welcome to Admission Straight Talk. And Lee, thank you for your service.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
It's my pleasure. Now, can you tell us a little bit, let's start with Lee. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, your background, and how you got interested in medicine?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good question. I was born and raised in Northern California in a little area just outside Sacramento, known as Folsom Lake. And growing up, my dad actually worked for the state of California. His name's Bill Burnett. And working for the state, he ended up working with something called the Song-Brown Commission. It was a group that had looked at primary care back in the 60s and 70s in California, because there was a significant fear back then that everybody was going to become a specialist. That was the trend at the time. And there was an understanding even back then in the 60s that primary care was still something that was going to be necessary if we wanted to control healthcare costs and make sure that patients are getting the best healthcare that they can get. So just naturally, as I was growing up, my dad's involvement with the state, he would come into contact with lots of primary care docs. And so I would always be seeing a doc when we were going out to a meeting, or if somebody had come over to the house for dinner or something. And so just naturally through all the exposure, all these physicians, just became very interested in healthcare and specifically in primary care. So the intent really, since I was even in high school, was to become a physician and then a family medicine physician. And fortunately, that's exactly what I did.
Wow. And how did you come to pursue your career primarily in the military at this point?
Yeah. that's a whole left turn there. So, yeah, I was actually in residency, and a recruiter had come to our residency program and said, "Hey, we have this program where we'll reimburse some of your student loans, and in return, you serve 6 years in the reserves." And my grandfather, he retired from the U.S. Army, and my dad had served a couple years as a sailor in the Navy. So there's a family tradition of military service, and something that I was always interested in doing. And so I went for it and said, "Sure, I'd love to do it." Reserve sounds like a good thing, and to be able to give back to the country and help take care of our soldiers. And then this was back in 1997, quite a while ago now. And it was a time which I don't know how many people listening to your podcast would remember if they were even born. But it was a time when really there was peace across the world. The Berlin Wall had fallen. And there didn't seem like there was a much risk of any future war in a significant capacity. So it seemed like, okay, sounds like a good thing. I like people to serve. So I signed up and finished out my time as a family practice resident, graduated from UC Irvine, like you mentioned, back in 2000. And then, when, of course, 2001 comes along, right, and 9/11 tragically happens. And then after that, it went from being something that was, you know, maybe it was going to be, you know, one week in a month and 2 weeks a year. That dynamic changed significantly, and ended up getting deployed a couple of times to Iraq. And then while deployed, I just became very interested in actually making it a full-time career. I had really enjoyed my time when I was deployed. I was working with some great surgeons, great physicians, nurses, PAs, and just the enjoyment that I was getting treating our soldiers who are out there on the front lines. I just couldn't be beat. I had a great practice on the, in a private practice back in Mission Viejo, California, and I loved my patients and really enjoyed practice of family medicine. But at the end of the day, I just couldn't compare to what I could do as an Army physician.
Got it. And how did you come to found Student Doctor Network?
Yeah, well, it really started, it started actually as a newspaper back when I was still in medical school. So I went to Western University, and this was back, well, 93, 94 timeframe, kind of pre-World Wide Web. We were publishing a newspaper. A friend of mine, Frank Cortez, and I said, you know what, there's really no newspaper for osteopathic medical schools at the time. Mm-hmm. I think there were like 17 osteopathic schools, medical schools at the time. So I said, why don't we create a newspaper, and we'll get a report from each of the different schools as far as what's happening there, and then we'll publish the newspaper. It'll be supported by advertising, so it's free to all the students, and it'd just be a great way to find out what's going on in all the other schools, because we were in California, and the nearest DO school, I think at the time, was probably Kirksville, Missouri. And so we just really, unless we were at like a convention or something, never got to see the other DO students, find out what's going on at their schools. This was before people were even routinely using email. So it might be hard for people to understand what it was like pre-World Wide Web. But that's where it started. So it started with a newspaper. And then as the web became a thing, we transitioned it over to, we continued to publish the newspaper, but then also had the articles online, and I was in charge of doing that part of it. And then that just naturally transitioned into adding on a chat room, and that transitioned eventually into, we started partnering with a couple of other websites, MD, a dental website. And then one day we said, you know what, why don't we just combine our individual projects into one big project? And we called it the Student Doctor Network. And that we launched back in, actually, this is the 20-year anniversary. December of 1999 is when we launched it.
Officially, wow.
The Student Doctor Network. Yeah, so this is actually good timing. I know it wasn't intended, but that's we're talking on the 20th anniversary of the Student Doctor Network. So we launched it, and honestly, we thought the biggest part of the site was going to be the just all the information that we had on there. Because at the time, there wasn't really one easy way to find, like, how do you get into medical school, and what are the things I need to do, and what are the resources that are available, and what's a good MCAT score, and all this kind of information. There are just a few resources. One of them, I think actually your service was around back then.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. So you were one of the few out there at the time, one of the pioneers. There was always Kaplan or Princeton Review.
Wasn't there also a site, I vaguely remember, Kronos, mm-hmm. something Kronos.
Yeah. There were a few other sites out there. But no, there weren't very many, right? So,
we
wanted to just have a site that was free for students and have them be able to access information. And then we also, just as an aside, had the forums where students could talk to each other. And we didn't really expect that to be the big part of the site. But what happened is then over the next 4 or 5 years, that rapidly grew. And it was really cool because what we saw back then is students helping students and figuring out what's the best pathway to get into whatever med school they were trying to get into. And it was really neat to see. And it was a very positive environment. Obviously, things on the internet have changed a lot over the last 20 years. Yes. It's been much more collaborative and people helping people and very positive environment. And then just everywhere. I mean, it's not unique to Student Doctor Network or any other website. As more and more people got online and felt more and more anonymous, the tenor or the way that people interacted became a little bit more, I guess, aggressive. But we did our best to try to control that. But even with over 100 volunteer moderators and some part-time staff trying to keep that kind of behavior under control. Still, from time to time, you still do see some negative folks out there. People who are just not happy with how things are going for them, or whatever. But by and large, I think the Student Doctor Network continues to do great things through the forums with students. Continue to help students and sharing information,
interview feedback.
Yeah, we have all these other areas of the site that that we've been able to grow and. MD applicants, DDS applicants, interview feedback, residency selector. There's a bunch of other stuff, and I'm sure Laura can hop in there on some of that as well. But it's just something that
Laura, don't worry, we're going to get to you.
Okay, it's just something it's been growing over the years. As we see a new need that students are bringing up on the forums, we look how can we build something that's free for students to. That gets after the need that they have, and it's great. And really, I feel what we've been able to do over the years, we're kind of at the forefront of pushing, a real, trying to think of the right way to put it, but trying to make sure that students are put first in this process, I think is the best way to put it. Mm-hmm. And there's been times in the past where I won't name any organizations or schools, but schools and some organizations were very resistant to students having any say in the applications process, or even having knowledge of how the process works. For instance, like you mentioned, the interview feedback. When that was first put online back almost 20 years ago now, there were some schools that were very upset that students could know what the potential questions of them would be, which now it just seems silly, because all schools.
I think there were a lot of entities and organizations that were very upset about losing control of information.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of information hoarding, and rather than trying to help students get into school and try to have them be as successful as possible, it was a very, very different approach back. Before the 2000s, but now you look at AAMC, or you look at AOA, or you look at AAMC or COMAS, or some of the other organizations out there, and how much they've changed over the years. I think really AAMC is one of the most obvious ones. How student centric now their website is, and all the resources that they put out there for students. It's awesome to see that, and I'm glad that we're able to kind of help push that envelope forward.
Well, that was one of the big things for Accepted, and still is to a certain degree, but that Accepted was providing information. In the 1990s, late 1990s, early 2000s, we were providing more information as an individual entity. I think on the medical school admissions process, probably through the 2000s, than I think any medical school was.
You're right. I absolutely agree that sites like yourself and Student Doctor Network, ValueMD, there are a bunch of different sites that have more information on them about a school than the school would have itself on its own website. Which seems strange now, but that's certainly how it was really up through a good portion of the 2000s.
And I remember, I think, for as long as the thing was in existence, referring people to the interview feedback database, it was invaluable. And it still is invaluable. Just to be able to practice with real questions is fantastic.
Yeah, now, absolutely.
Laura, how did you, I said I was going to get to you. How did you come to work for Student Doctor Network from a mechanical engineering background?
Well, my background is from an educational perspective, mechanical engineering, but I worked my entire career at a variety of different software companies. Okay. So coming right out of school, I went straight into a mechanical engineering software company and then stayed in the software realm, despite the fact that it wasn't the computer science side of things, but more the project management side of things. And so I got the opportunity to come to Student Doctor Network and help out with developing some more stuff with them in 2009 and be able to start doing some more things to try and add additional items to help students, which, as you know, as Lee has mentioned, that we would take a look at what people are asking for and try and come up with additional tools and items that can help them with their process. And I feel really strongly about the mission. I think that Student Doctor Network does really amazing things and that we get to help students every day. And, you know, we're helping people achieve their dreams every day. And I think that's an easy thing to get behind.
Right, right, for sure. Laura, what's your favorite resource at SDN?
My favorite resource? Well, I worked on a number of them, so I like a lot of them. I think the specialty selector is really interesting. It's based on Anita Taylor's book. We worked with her on that project, and it really allows you to answer some questions about who you are and what you value, and then compares that to data that she had collected about the different physicians in the different specialties to see if you match up. And I think it's very interesting for students to take a look at that and figure out, well, what is kind of the area that might be a good fit for me? You know, is it going to be a surgery? Is it going to be, an internal medicine subspecialty? Is it going to be a primary care specialty? So I think that's one of the ones I really like. I also really like our medical school application cost calculator. That's one that lets you figure out how much it's going to cost you to apply to medical school. I think everyone has seen a lot of the news coverage about how expensive medical school is. The New York Times just had that great article about how expensive it is to attend medical school. But right. I think there's not always the best knowledge of just how expensive it is just to apply, to prepare and apply to the school. And it seems like the hurdles just keep going up higher and higher for students. And so for students to be able to figure out, okay, what makes sense for budgetary planning, I think is an important thing.
Yeah. That's invaluable.
Yeah. And I'll vouch, I think I really do like, I'll vouch for Laura on this one. I really do like the specialty selector. I took it myself when we first developed it. Fortunately, it did come up that I should be a family medicine doc. So it's definitely accurate. And so
that's great.
I like that one. And then that cost, the medical school applications cost calculator, which is a mouthful to say, by the way. But that was put together by a medical student, Ben Shapiro, and Laura leading as a project manager on that one. It's really eye-opening to see how expensive it is. Now, when I applied to medical school back in the very early 90s, it was pricey, but it wasn't outrageous. But it's I'd put the costs now up in the outrageous category. It's really expensive.
It's amazing that it's things that you don't think are going to add up. It adds up to, you know, a few thousand dollars, and that's very
just
significant.
The application fees alone can be about $3,000. That's not counting it's not counting travel. It's just, not counting a consultant. It's just those fees is already $3,000.
Yes. And it seems that students are now applying to so many more schools than perhaps they did when Lee was applying to school. So that, if you've gone up by 5 or 10 schools, that's another $1,000 in application fees.
Right. And I know we have on staff Alita Wood Hill, who's been a pre-med advisor for decades. And I think her husband was a financial aid director before he retired. And she was saying that the applicants just don't realize how expensive it is and they don't budget for it. She feels, it's really important to get that information out there.
Absolutely. I can think back when I was applying, I certainly didn't budget for it. And had it been more than just a, you know, a couple of plane rides and just the application fees at the time. So I did a Kaplan course for the MCAT, which I think worked really, really well. I'm not being sponsored by Kaplan, by the way. but that worked really well for my style. And then did some traveling for some interviews. But the application fees seem like they've gone up significantly over the last 30 years. And I think there was a lot of competition, certainly when I was applying for medical school, but it pales in comparison to the amount of competition there is now. And so students, I think, are forced to have to apply to many more medical schools than they did, certainly during my time.
Was there a common app when you applied to medical school? Was it already an MCAS app or an ACOMAS app?
Yeah, those are both there at the time, and they're both paper. Bubble it all in with like a Scantron form. But they were in existence, but it was a lot more labor intensive than what you have nowadays with the
I have a theory that the law of unintended consequences is at play with the ease of a common application, especially an online common application. And that it basically, both with medical school and with college, where you have the Common App, it has certainly increased, again, law of unintended consequences, increased the frenzy and the competition because it made it so easy to apply to more schools.
Absolutely. And the second and third order effects of now I can email my professor and say, hey, you remember me from 2 years ago? Can you... a letter of recommendation versus how it used to be, where you actually have to go over and meet them during their office hours and then thank them for a letter. Then there certainly was no Interfolio or any of these other services where everything would go to a centralized processing and then get sent out. So it's you're right. I think the ease of application and the lower bar now to do that has just increased the competition significantly.
Right. And then you have instead of a time cost, you have a financial cost. Now, just for Laura, what are you, I guess, because you're now primarily the one running SDN, am I correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what are your plans for SDN going forward?
Well, that's a good question. We have some different projects that we're working on. We are always, as we mentioned, kind of looking at what people are looking to get in the process. So we kind of keep an eye on what people are talking about in the forums and things like that. One of the newer things that we've added is called Study Schedule. That was actually developed by someone who's now a current medical student and worked with SDN on it, and it allows you to figure out your best MCAT study plan. So it lets you say, I have 3 months to study for the MCAT. I'm going to take it on this date, and I have these particular materials, and it'll map out, okay, this is what you should be studying each day, and it breaks it out for you so you can have a study plan. And
Fantastic.
It's customized, and you can also say, oh, physics I'm great at. I did really well in physics, but my OCHEM is really weak. So let me spend some additional time in OCHEM. So that's something that we have and that we're continuing to do additional work on. We've also published recently, we have a few more in the pipeline for some of the other communities, how to get into dental school, how to get into physical therapy school, and how to get into occupational therapy school for some of our other areas. And then we have an optometry school one that's in the pipeline getting developed, as well as a veterinary school one as well.
And everything we don't actually do anything regarding TA programs and nor do we do anything like for DNP programs. The reason is that we were very specific when we set up the site that it's a student doctor network, and we really just wanted to focus on healthcare professions that had a doctorate degree associated with
it. Okay.
Now, DNP developed after the student doctor network. But it was already pretty well covered by another website, I think allnurses.com. So it was an area where we didn't feel we needed to go into. And then we did used to have a PA form when we first launched before we really kind of focused on, hey, we really needed to stick to being, you know, doctor centric. And so there's another PA forum, which I believe is called PA Forums. I think they do a great job as far as being a good resource for people that are interested in PA school. But by no means am I want to slight any of those other communities, because you know, certainly I work with DNPs and PAs and CRNAs every single day. And they are amazing and do great work. It just was not something that we focused on with the student doctor network.
Got it. Now, Lee, you alluded to this, but I'd like to kind of address it more directly. Mm-hmm. I think that anonymity does not bring out the best in human beings. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Right. How would you respond to people who complain that there are trolls and a lot of negativity on the student doctor network forums? I know you tried to create something that's really positive, but how would you respond?
You're kind of back like what I mentioned before, but I'd agree. When you put somebody behind a keyboard and you take away that face-to-face interaction, it becomes very easy to kind of
degrade
ourselves, to degrade, debase, whatever. But really, you know, become that person that you wouldn't want to have your friends or family see necessarily. I don't know necessarily what drives that, what part of the human psyche that touches, but what's
not the better one.
Not the better one, that's for sure. Yeah. What I've seen, though, like I mentioned, is certainly the first 5, 6, 7, maybe 10 years of Student Doctor Network is very positive. And people helping people. But then as the number of people on the internet grew just tremendously from what, like 2008 on, when you look at graphs of number of people who have access to the internet, that's when we really started to see kind of trolling take off. And it's not, again, not unique to Student Doctor Network. You see it.
No, not at all.
Every site you go to, right? If you ever look in the comments of any blog nowadays, it's always a bunch of garbage in there. So, what we originally had is we made sure our volunteers very much focused on allow form homeostasis is what we call it, because what used to happen was if one person kind of got out of line and started saying stupid stuff, like two or three other members would say, hey, knock it off, that kind of behavior is not what we do here, and then the person would get in line and it'd be okay. But as more and more people started using the site, that self, you know, that homeostasis of the forms, it didn't hold up. And so we had to become much more aggressive with the moderators getting in there, and when somebody's getting out of line, putting them in a timeout, or if they're really out of line, just banning them from the site. And over the years, we've had to get more and more aggressive, and then add more and more technology so that we can keep people off the site once they've been removed if they're particularly bad. Now, I would say that the vast, vast majority of people who use Student Doctor Network or really any other site are good people with good intentions and post very positive and appropriate things. But all it takes, it's just human nature, all it takes is one or two knuckleheads for posting, you know, something either just to get people stirred up, or maybe they're just having a really bad day or whatever. It just takes those one or two, and everybody remembers those one or two knuckleheads that were negative or said something bad about, you know, what their hope was for the future, and maybe it just didn't sit right. So it's it is human nature for us to all focus on those negatives, even if 99% of the site is positive. It's that 1% that people focus on, and that's just the nature of things. It's not any different on Student Doctor Network than say Reddit or any other.
Oh no, I've said Reddit's kind of worse. I haven't been there in ages, but that's what I understand.
Yeah. So Lord, Reddit, the way. Let me talk about Reddit real quick. Reddit, the way they've kind of approached it is clever. They up or down vote. They allow their members to up or down vote in a forum. So if somebody's posting something that's bad, it gets a lot of down votes, and then that post kind of gets hidden. I think that is a really good strategy. Unfortunately, it also then causes a real silo or a bubble where somebody might say, well, here's what I want to do for my future. Is this a good idea? And then if somebody else came in and said, no, it's not really a good idea because X, Y, and Z, and they're absolutely valid points. Well, if the person doesn't like it, they downvote them and they disappear, and then just get this bubble of positive reinforcement and nobody right. actually telling you the truth. Like, hey, no, your idea doesn't work. So that's where I think we still have an edge there, and that mm-hmm. we do allow dissent as long as it's professional. The other thing that we've done, courteous. And if it's not, then people need to report it so our moderators can get in there and address it. The other thing that we've done is we've made the site a membership site over the last year. So anybody registering for the site, you can't just get an account and just start posting. You have to, just like a Facebook group, you have to register. If you have a .edu address or .gov, .mil, they'll be approved automatically because those are accounts that we know are tied to somebody's actual identity. But if you're coming in and say a Gmail or something, then it goes to goes into a bin that then our volunteer team takes a look at, and each application is reviewed to make sure that the person who's applying is somebody who's actually interested in being a part of the community, wants to contribute positively, and isn't going to be a troll. So that's how we've been getting after it on our end. But I know you had a question for Laura, so let me turn it back.
How many volunteers are working at Student Doctor Network?
We have about 30 volunteer moderators who are quite active. We also have a number of folks who serve as experts for our confidential consult area, which is an area where students can ask questions that are then made anonymous. So they can get an answer from experts that do not show their information. And that's, I think, as Lee was saying, certainly I think anonymity can bring out the worst in people, but there are definitely situations where it is
appropriate,
good for a student to be able to ask a question anonymously and get good answers. For example, if someone has an IA and they want to ask about, what should I do, or situations where students had some kind of traumatic event and how that's going to be impacting their application. They may not want to talk about that in a public forum, but it's still information that they need to get. So.
Right. Yeah, that also sounds very valuable. Did you have anything to add to Lee's response about the trolls, which I think was fairly comprehensive?
I think it's pretty comprehensive. We have, over the years, we used to not talk about when someone was removed. We're a little more open about that now. Like, mm-hmm. this person has been removed for this reason. We are constantly trying to evolve and look at different areas. There's some movements afoot just in the internet, the Santa Clarita principles, I believe it's what it's called, to be more open about moderation. We do try to be very open about, what are the things that will get somebody removed from the site. And they're pretty clearly stated. We have pretty plain text information in our terms of service that talk about the things that'll get you into trouble. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Great. This is for each of you. What advice do you have for pre-meds and med students? Tell you what, Laura, you want to start with this one? And then we'll go to Laura.
Sure.
Okay.
I would say that it's very easy to compare yourself to everybody else you see, but you really need to focus on making your application the best application it can be. It's going to have you're going to have strengths, you're going to have weaknesses, and that you just want to plan things out and do what you can to make your application the best it can be, but try, and of course it's difficult, but try not to compare yourself to the other applicants out there, because your application is going to be different from everybody else's.
Mm-hmm. It needs to be. And Lee, what do you have to add to that? You've gone through the process. You're also now in a position where you're probably hiring physicians.
Oh yeah, certainly. Yeah, certainly. When I had my own practice, we hired physicians all the time. So I would kind of echo along with what Laura was saying, but specifically that there's really no one pathway. There's no one right pathway to get into medical school. You can go MD route and go DO route. If you want to be an English, major at undergrad, be an English major undergrad. If you love music, you love doing other things, explore those things that you love, and don't feel that you have to be one more pre-med who has the biology degree and did all the extracurriculars just like everybody else did, of going and volunteering at the hospital and that sort of thing. Follow your own passions and do the things that you really enjoy. Obviously, you still need to get the basics. There are certain basics that you just have to get out of the way. You have to have a reasonable MCAT score. You have to have reasonable grades. You do have to take the prereqs that schools require. But outside of that, schools are looking for people. And frankly, as somebody who's hired physicians, we're looking for people who have diverse points of view, who are diverse people that are not all cookie cutter. And certainly in primary care, I think we've got some of the most diverse, interesting men and women, really in healthcare. And so celebrate your individuality, celebrate what you makes you, and follow your passions. That's what I would say. And you'll do fine when you apply to medical school.
Sounds like great advice from both of you. Thank you. And also for both of you, what do you wish I had asked you?
Yeah, I'm just happy to have the opportunity to talk about the Student Doctor Network. So it's really been a labor of love. I've been a volunteer essentially from day one back.
It's 20 years now, right? We just said it's right.
Exactly right, and it's just been a lot of fun doing this over the last 20 years, and it's been neat to see the changes and the challenges. And
that was the one question. I just thought of a question that I do want to ask you, and that is, Lee, what changes do you see?
Moving forward, or just
no, in over the last 20 years. Over the last 20 years, do you see changes in, let's say, the medical student world? Mm-hmm. I don't mean just the technology. I don't mean the internet. We all know about the internet. I mean, what changes do you see?
One of the things that I find most interesting is the parental involvement that's crept in, I think, in the last, especially the last 10 years. And I'm sure you probably see the same thing.
Yes, we do.
At Accepta.com. But thinking back to 2005, for instance, or even 2009, I can't remember ever having a parent on our forum or emailing us questions or anything. But now it's extremely common, almost to the point where we're considering having a forum for parents of pre-health students. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know what that means. It's just an observation. I think it's great.
Absolutely. We get many more calls from parents than we used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My only advice there, if anybody wants to hear it, would be, kids need to be given the opportunity to jump through these hoops, I think, on their own, because those hoops never go away. It's a challenge to become a physician on purpose. If it was easy to become a physician, everybody could do it. But it's hard to become a physician, because being a physician is that you are committing your life to it. It's not just another job. It's a profession, and
it's a calling.
It's a way of life. It's a calling, right? And you're going to be giving your best years just to learning how to become a physician, and then the rest of your life, giving a good chunk of yourself to your patients through the number of hours that you have to work, through those times where you have to be at the hospital rather than at the kids' baseball game. There are so many hoops and so many challenges that are put up because it's such a challenging profession. And I would just say to a parent who wants their student to, or wants their child to be successful, maybe step back and give them the opportunity to try it on their own and see if they have the skills, the tools in their toolkit to get into school and to get through. Because I think if you back off and let them do it, they're going to be better for it, stronger, and they'll be more successful as they go through their life as a physician.
And the parent can't go to medical school for them.
No, yeah. Nobody wants them. Nobody wants them there, that's for sure. Unless they're paying tuition too. The other thing that you're asking as far as changes, maybe talking about the future of the student doctor network. We could talk about that briefly if you have a minute.
Sure.
I think what we've talked primarily about our forums and about some of the other resources that we have. And certainly forums are the big area of the site. But moving forward, I don't know that that's really the area we want to, as an organization, continue to focus on. There's lots of great resources out there, but really, I think we're at a point now in our organization development where we really need to reassess and say, okay, we've been doing this for 20 years. Let's be a little introspective and say, what are we doing that is helping the community, and where can we really maximize that over the next 20 years, right? We want to continue to be successful. We can't just keep doing the same thing we've been doing. What we're really looking at is changing our mission a bit. So rather than just helping students become doctors, which has been a motto or slogan or a vision over the last 20 years, really going more towards what does the nation need? And I could tell you, living here in rural Louisiana, and seeing the healthcare in these rural areas, the United States, there's still it's hard as it can be if you live in Southern California or New York or whatever, where you have tons and tons of docs and super specialists. When you're out here in these rural areas, there is a desperate need just for basic primary care, and there's just not enough of it right now. So what we're looking to do is really changing so that Student Doctor Network continues to help students, but really with a focus on trying to help the nation as a whole, and trying to get more students who are interested in coming back and serving in these rural or underserved communities. Mm-hmm. And focusing our energy and our efforts towards those students primarily. Now, as we've done over the last 20 years, we'll continue to provide everything for free for any student who wants to have access to it. But put an extra effort, an extra layer of support in for those students who are clearly on a pathway or have committed to a pathway to serving in an underserved community, whether that's an underserved inner city area or a rural area like we're in currently. That's how we see moving forward with the Student Doctor Network. We're going to be most successful, and that's our vision.
Okay, great. Laura, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I think Lee did a great job summarizing, some of the new ideas that we've been talking about, and that, our goal is really, like we said, it's to help students, and to help students, and through doing that, help healthcare in the United States. And that's really, that was an area that we identified as an issue, that one of the things that students who are from underserved areas, if you come from an underserved area, you're more likely to go back to an underserved area. So we're looking at different things that we could potentially do to help those students out. We don't have anything completely concrete at this point. We're still working on our efforts in that area, but we hope to have some more information available soon, coming into 2020, to talk more about what we'll be doing in that area.
Okay, great. Thank you. This has been fascinating. Lee and Laura, I think we are running out of time, and I know you're both very busy. I want to thank you so much for joining me for the show, And thanks for sharing your experience and perspective. Where can listeners find out more about, this is a really easy question. Where can listeners find out more about Student Doctor Network?
It is a really easy question.
That's an easy one.
Definitively for you. It's studentdoctor.net. It's all one word, studentdoctor.net. Or if you really want to type it short, you can type sdn.net. That'll also take you there too.
That'll also work. Okay. Well, we're going to include links in the show notes at exhibit.com/347 to studentdoctor.net, as well as to other related resources. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, our 347th episode. If you found this show worthwhile, please make sure you don't miss any others. Subscribe through your favorite podcatcher. We have subscribe links in the show notes at exhibit.com/347. Quick reminder, you can download a complimentary copy of Med School Admissions, What You Need to Know to Get Accepted, at exhibit.com/347download. Grab your copy now. This is Admissions Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.